Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
Sonia, we are in Season 2 of X-Men Evolution. We're on Episode 2, an episode called Bada Bing, Bada Boom. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not the greatest title, but it is about Boom Boom.
Yeah.
An interesting mutant character.
They don't reveal her name in this episode, I don't think. Do they?
I think they did in the previous one.
Oh, okay.
Maybe they don't outright say Boom Boom, but her name is Samantha...
No, Tabitha.
Oh, sorry, Tabitha Smith.
Mm-hmm.
She's a, you know, not exactly a famous X-Men character. She's from New Mutants, and she's from X-Force, mainly, in the comic line. But she hasn't had her, like, she wasn't a character in the movies, really. Although there might have been an oblique reference to her in some movie. And she's been in a, like, she was in the original X-Men series. She was a character that came up, like, once in one episode.
Mm-hmm.
But she wasn't, you know, a main character by any means there. So here she gets, like, probably her biggest spotlight in the world of animated X-Men.
So far, yeah.
Right. And so we'll be talking about that. But before we do, I want to remind people you can follow me on Twitter, at Willie Simpson. Join the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group. And rate and review us 5 stars on iTunes, whatever podcast service you use. But before we begin, I do want to put a little... close the chapter on The Boys Season 2. We mentioned last week that we'd seen, like, the first 6 episodes, and now we've completed the second season, and I wanted to see if you had any scalding hot takes before we jump into this latest Evolution episode.
I wouldn't say scalding hot takes. I enjoyed it a lot. I thought Season 2 was better than Season 1 a little bit, even, maybe.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean...
Yeah, I liked it. I think the character writing was better in Season... It made me like the characters more in Season 2.
Yeah, same. They developed the characters very well, and the relationships between them, and kind of made them more real
I went from, like, being annoyed at Huey and Starlight to really liking them and rooting for them in this season.
Yeah. There definitely are, like, a couple of things I could nitpick that I didn't love, just...
I think there's some parts
whatever.
There's parts that confused me. Like, I didn't quite understand why the characters... like want to hold on to being in the Seven, but that's I don't know, I think they did enough to try to explain that, but I the whole time I just kept thinking, like, why don't they just quit? That was, like, something that I kept going back in my brain, like, why doesn't Maeve just quit this team?
I think they wrote it in subtle ways that all the characters kind of had different motivations for wanting to stay, whether it was fear of Homelander or
Right,
a moral responsibility to stay, like, close to Vought to be able to prevent trouble.
Right, and that was being the case
easily.
Of Starlight at the end of Season 2.
Yeah.
But there's some mixed things. Like, I didn't quite get why characters like Maeve just doesn't quit at the end after she sort of, like, steps up and, like, does a good thing without mm-hmm. really going too much into spoilers. So, I don't know. I was a little, like... That was, like, my only real complaint. But other than that, the show, like, amazing characterizations. Carl Urban, what a great actor that guy is. Just doing, you know, I think it's hard to do a sort of Cockney British character, Cockney accented British character, and not fall into just, like, a complete stereotypical cartoon performance. And there are elements of that with his performance, but he pulls it off so beautifully. And he's got such a menacing... awesome personality in the show. You just love him completely, and it makes me wish that I could figure out some kind of dream casting for him in the MCU. I think he's too tall to be Wolverine. I think they got to try to find an actor at least in the 5 foot range of Wolverine. I'm not saying he has to be 5'4" like Wolverine supposedly is. He could be like 5'10", but they have to find someone just a little shorter than 6 foot to be Wolverine. And I think Carl Urban is what he's like. 6'1" or 6'2".
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Could he be Beast? You need for Beast, you need a real soulful guy. Carl Urban might be a little too intense for Beast, but I don't know. I mean, Beast has his intense moments as well. I think you could find a part for him in the X-Men universe. Maybe he could be one of the villains. I don't know. Maybe he could be Magneto or something. But I love Carl Urban. I mean, I love all the actors on the show. They're really, really good. The guy who plays Homelander is amazing.
Yeah.
He reminds me of just the way his jowls on his face. He's like Marlon Brando in The Godfather,
mm-hmm.
where it looks like he put two cotton balls in the bottom of his chin. I don't know if that's just the way he looks or if he actually did that.
I mean, I think that's just the way he looks, but also that harsh camera lens that they use, where, you know, like a lot of Instagram filters and stuff do like a soft touch to everything. They like blur things to make it look like more pleasing.
Okay.
Here they did the opposite. It's like high contrast, dark colors.
I don't like the, that's what, the only real complaint I have about the show is the high contrast look of it.
Really?
I mean, I also complained last week too about the CGI gore. Adam on the Facebook group or someone else, they called it that, the black blood effect.
Right.
I'm not like the biggest fan of that sort of visual presentation.
There's a lot of it in
yeah
here.
I mean, but you're right, this is like an Instagram filtered show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what I'm looking for in cinematography in a superhero genre, but the MCU, one of the biggest complaints you can make about it, and I've seen video presentations about the colors being really washed out in a way, even though they try to have a lot of bright colors in the MCU, but there's something very flat about the way the whole, like, that whole film, you know, chronology looks.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the sort of the color choices they've made and the lighting choices they've made to keep the series consistent. I've seen a lot of criticism of that, and I could buy it too. Like, you kind of want it to pop more and to have a little bit more visual lighting realism. But it's hard to do that, I guess, when so much of it's CGI'd. But then on the other end of the spectrum, the DC Universe 2 has gotten criticized as well for its gritty aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And the sort of dark, it's more like The Boys.
This is more similar to that.
The Boys is like, it looks like the DC kind of Man of Steel, Zack Snyder-y style of, and I feel like there's got to be a way to do it right, you know. There's got to be a way to make superhero genre pop in a beautiful way that we haven't quite seen yet. That's just like a minor nitpick. But The Boys is great. Did you have any other thoughts before we get on to X-Men Evolution here?
The one comparison I wanted to make was there's a scene at the end where it's like all the female superheroes go to battle together, sort of.
Right. Against Stormfront.
As I was watching it, I was like, oh, this is a better version of what they were trying to do.
Yeah, in Avengers
Endgame. With like the whole lineup, because it was natural that all of them were there. They all had a motivation for that fight to be in it. And like they came in, you know, as like the timing would be naturally, like the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's good. They get a point, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But then they had to add the line because there had been like a marketing campaign for them in earlier episodes where they had to say like girls get it done or something.
Yeah, yeah. So
and then they added that line in, like somebody says it.
Yeah.
And I was like, they kind of ruined it.
It was a little bit lame. Like
it was like almost really good.
They're saying it sarcastically.
Yeah.
And they had set it up like you said, but still it was a little. But that was a satisfying scene though, and the actress who plays Stormfront was so menacingly terrifying.
Yeah.
That. What a character she was. I saw in an interview with her that she said she wants to be in the X-Men universe, and she was looking at, there's three characters she mentioned, Jean Grey, Rogue, and then she wanted to do a gender swap of Beast.
Hmm.
Which I think she was like the least serious about, because she said later on, like, don't hate me, X-Men fans, I'm just, you know, using my imagination, it's just my fantasy to be in the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like she's gonna be Beast if you really care. I'm not saying she would do a bad job, but I think with just based on the performance I see on her from The Boys, Beast requires, like I said earlier, like a more soulful type of performance to be Beast. And I don't know. I think like her strengths is just super like high wire intensity of characterization. And then again, like I don't really see her though as Jean Grey or Rogue either.
Rogue if she can do a good Southern accent. I don't know.
She seems a little old for Rogue. I don't know how old she really. I mean, like, but she just seems to have a bit more of a mature face. Am I woefully off track there?
I don't know. I think it's the high contrast lens again. I don't think you can really tell
what her age is. I mean, to me, she just like looked like a woman in her mid-30s. She didn't seem like, to me, I think when Rogue, I think of like a woman in her young 20s.
That's fine, but I mean, like a lot of that casting is done completely, like without regard for actual age, and they just do like the makeup and the lighting and stuff, and it's fine. You
absolutely
know?
Yeah, I mean, maybe she could. I don't really see her for Jean Grey or Rogue, but again, like put her in the X-Men universe though. I could see her as a villain. I mean, I'm too influenced by The Boys, but she could be Lady Deathstrike or something. You know, but anyway, check out The Boys season 1 and 2. if you haven't yet, it's so good, especially if you love superhero stuff. It's like the perfect inversion of the whole genre, and sort of like a
but
nice,
not child appropriate.
Do definitely not child appropriate. I think they kind of they do what Deadpool was trying to do better. I know Deadpool's more slapsticky, but
I was gonna say the sense of humor is completely different.
It is, but I mean, there's elements of that Deadpool sense of humor in the gross out gore, and there's parts of the Deadpool movies that are like attempt to have like engage the plot in an intense and serious way, mm-hmm. especially in the first one. I think that's what makes the first one really good. Are the moments of just like following Wade along on his revenge plot against that other guy, Francis. That like you really get in, you know, you want to see him succeed, and like you see what he has a clear motivation, right? So I think like The Boys is like just like a more refined and clever take on what Deadpool was sort of scratching at, and I think that's a good thing. Because Deadpool wasn't bad by any means.
Well, Deadpool also had a different audience. They were going to be a theatrical release. They're trying to appeal to like a much wider audience.
Well, I mean, it was R-rated.
Yeah, but this, I feel like...
I know what you're saying. Yeah,
this they had a little more artistic
this is a bit right. This is a bit more niche and a bit more... Definitely a bit more, like, definitely geared towards adults. It's not for... Like, Deadpool was a rated R, so it was technically for adults, but you could tell that...
Plenty of, like, younger people watched it.
They want teenagers to watch it and to love it. So, Boys is great. But let's move on to X-Men Evolution here. The Boom Boom episode. So, Sonya, how does it begin?
All right, so we open up on a training mission. I don't know, they're doing... It's like a cliffside with a pink... sunrise or sunset or something like
well pink is sort of I think it's an appropriate color choice to begin the episode, and I think of Boom Boom, I do think of the color pink. I remember I had her Marvel trading cards as a kid, and she's blowing bubble gum in them. So, I don't know, maybe that's just me. I don't know if like really I don't really know much about the character from the comics. I know she's from New Mutants and X-Force, but I'd like never, to be honest, I've never read a panel of Boom Boom. You know, I never remember like coming across her in a panel in any of my X-Men comics.
I didn't even think of this scene in relation to who they were introducing. I just was like, oh, the art team is trying to make it look nice. Like, they're really trying here. That's all I really thought about it. But anyway, they're doing this training exercise. Boom Boom has to rescue Nightcrawler. He's supposedly knocked out on the side of a cliff somewhere.
They did sort of catch me off guard at first. I did think he was passed out.
Oh.
Like, I did, I don't know, maybe...
They gotcha.
They did get me. Not like the other one where they did the fake out in the danger room where it was so obvious.
Mm.
When Wolverine and Storm were doing a mock invasion of the X-Mansion.
Mm-hmm.
But here, I like was taken a little bit off guard. I wasn't quite sure what the scenario was. But, yeah, it is just a training session. Nightcrawler's pretending to be injured on a mountain cliff.
Right, and you get the impression that Boom Boom really doesn't care about doing any of this. She's, like, listening to her headphones. She's not, like, ready when it's her turn to go do something.
She's
and then
belittling Wolverine. She calls him Badger, which I thought was kind of funny.
Right. And he's, like, super serious. He's like, it's Wolverine. He can't handle a little goofing around.
Mm.
But so she, like, you know, climbs down a rope or something onto the cliffside and... Like, her and Nightcrawler are just kind of having fun goofing around. She gets him onto, like, a stretcher sort of thing to lift him up. But he, like, falls off in the end because they're goofing around too much.
Yeah, well, I mean, at first, it's intentionally he falls off because she didn't strap him down. But it seems that Nightcrawler is kind of pushing the limit, too, because he enjoys goofing around with this young mutant. And, so they're having lots of fun, but then disaster does strike.
He actually falls off and doesn't catch himself, and then Cyclops and Wolverine have to rescue him. Again, this is all before school in the morning. It's got to be like 6 or 7 a.m.
Maybe it's a Sunday or a Saturday.
No, because they reference it later when they're at school. Okay. Cyclops is like, you almost got hurt this morning or something like that. I'm like, damn.
What a rough schedule to be young
X-Man. 6 a.m. training
X-Man.
Exercises? Okay. Yeah. So anyways, you know, they get back to the X-Mansion and they're in trouble. Professor X tells Nightcrawler and Boom Boom they're going to be confined to the X-Mansion, big punishment, for 2 weeks after school. No using your powers, twice a day training sessions with Wolverine.
Right. Well, and because Nightcrawler is big into being an X-Man, he accepts this punishment readily. Well, Boom Boom is not pleased.
Right. He's like, oh, it's not as bad as it could have been. She's like, what, are you kidding me? It sucks. So, meanwhile, the bad guys...
The Brotherhood.
Right. I guess I should just start calling them the Brotherhood, right?
Maybe. Toad sort of refers to them as the Brotherhood, I think, kind
later
of...
Later on in this episode, yeah.
Kind of as a joke, but enough of a... You know, he's referencing the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, but that's not quite what they are.
Right.
Not officially. They're getting to that, you know... trying to go through, get to that title realistically.
Right.
They're like a fraternity or a frat house or something.
Yeah, and their house is like real ramshackle. It's like...
The animal house.
Yeah, it's definitely in disrepair. And they hint at the fact that it's Mystique's house, or that Mystique like has a room there, but she hasn't been there in quite a long time. And Evelyn says he thinks she's not coming back. So I guess she was their grown-up for a while, but now they're kind of on their own.
Right, it's a little right, and I like this mystery that it's unclear what their living situation is, who's really like whose house this belongs to.
I mean, again, it's kind of weird that she used to be the principal of their school. Like, these four teenage boys were just like living with the school principal. Like, that's weird.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, she's not anymore. Now the new principal, Principal Kelly, is planning a carnival at Bayville High. And he's going over with the secretary, like, showing her where the safe is behind a painting in the office, being like, okay, you have to deposit the money from the carnival here.
Right. They need the carnival to raise money because the gym was destroyed by a fire. Was there a fire in the gym in the battle last week? I know that the scoreboard collapsed in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
But was there a fire at the football game? Did I miss a random explosion?
Yeah, remember that like mascot was on fire?
Yeah, but did it crash in the gym? I thought it fell in the football field.
I don't know.
I don't know like what the deal with this fire was.
Anyway, they need repairs, so they need money, so they're having a carnival.
Right.
So we set up our episode.
Yeah.
As he is showing the secret hiding location of the safe to the secretary, a guy walks in and asks to see Boom Boom, or as I should say, Tabitha Smith.
Yeah.
He's her dad, and he needs to talk to her. But the secretary says, like, oh, like, you know, we can't authorize you to do that. She has a limited visitors list.
Right. So whatever. Obviously, like, the situation is the dad is... He's either got some kind of... what do they call those things? Like a
restraining order?
Restraining order against him or something to that effect, where he's not really even supposed to see his daughter.
Right.
And, you know, later on we learn he's an ex-felon and then the rest of that makes more sense.
Right. But the secretary just refers him to Professor X at the X-Mansion. He's like, all right, I'll go look there and see. But then he ends up finding her in the hallway. She was just kind of like goofing around and flirting with Kurt, I guess.
Yeah,
like,
she's kind of happy. She's, you know, she's using her powers in a very cavalier way in the high school. Nobody notices, even though she's blowing up lockers.
Right.
So her power is like she can create these little balls of energy.
She basically creates dynamite of varying strengths.
Right, but they're in sort of an orb shape. Again, the theme of orbs. Glowing orb shapes that she can make of different sizes.
Mm-hmm.
So they could be quite dangerous if she really makes a big one.
Yeah, but like you see her also use really small ones sometimes. Just we'll see it later for like practical jokes and stuff.
You know, in the X-Men arcade game, you could be Dazzler as one of the playable characters.
Mm-hmm.
And Dazzler's mutant power, you know, like if you're Cyclops, you press the mutant power button and he shoots his laser beams, right?
Mm-hmm.
For Dazzler, she has this ball of energy in her hand and she throws it on the ground. Which I don't really think is quite how I'd imagine Dazzler attacking someone.
Mm-hmm.
That attack just reminds me more of what Boom Boom would do.
Mm.
Is that? I think people at home are following what I'm saying.
Dazzler's powers are more like Jubilee's, kind of, aren't they?
Sort of, yeah. Like, she takes sound energy, and essentially I feel like she just shoots, like, a form of laser beams out of her hands with sound energy. It might be a little bit different than that. She's somewhere between Jubilee and Havoc.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the point is, whatever they showed in the arcade game, it didn't seem quite right. And I think, like, if they just called the character Boom Boom, it might have made more sense.
Mm.
Let me know what you think about that, folks at home. Do you think Dazzler should have been Boom Boom in the X-Men arcade? I'm intrigued to see if I'm just crazy here.
Well, anyway, she's, like, stealing Kurt's hamburger and, like, messing around with him. And then Kurt goes off to class and...
So, wait, what's your impression of this Boom Boom character? Do you like her? Or... Did you like her from watching this episode?
It's funny. She, like, reminds me of people I've known in my life.
Yeah.
And, like, it gives me that sensation of, like, oh, my God, that's the opposite of my personality.
You're not a Boo Boo. You're a Jean Grey.
I don't know. It makes me, like...
You're actually more of a Kitty Pryde, except not, but not the Kitty Pryde in the show. Like, the Kitty Pryde that's supposed to be, you know? Just like, brown, curly-haired girl that's very smart and... very clever.
Okay.
Not the Valley Girl, Kitty Pryde, we get in the show.
Well, anyway, she has this very, like, magnetic personality where she'll talk to anyone. She likes pretty much everyone. Like, she's not passing judgment on anyone around her. She's just kind of, like, moving through the world. Right. Like,
she doesn't have the attitude that Rogue had in the first season.
Right. She's very carefree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah?
She's fun.
Yeah.
Again, not, like, I probably wouldn't have been friends with her in high school, a girl like that. I think she's, I think, I let me just say this. I like this episode. I thought the characters were cool. I was interested in Boom Boom. The plot unfolded in a very interesting way. And I just really liked everything they set up in this episode, too. And the ending kind of surprised me as well, when we'll get to it. But yeah, I thought this Boom Boom character was very interesting,
mm-hmm.
and I'd like to see more of her. Although I did a little bit of research in the Marvel Wikipedia about the Boom Boom character in general, and they mentioned her appearances on X-Men Evolution. They say that her appearances got, like, significantly reduced. So I don't. This might be the, like, essentially, like, the most we're going to see of Boom Boom.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she comes back for sure, but I don't know if they, like, she's a major character going forward. Which is kind of a shame, because I think they did a good job setting her up here.
Yeah, I think also she could have had good interactions with some of the other characters. You know, like, Scott and Jean are so, like, uptight, and, like, Kurt's a rule follower, and, like, you have a lot of other
Kurt's
characters.
Kurt's not a rule follower.
Kurt? Kurt's in this, like, episode, he is.
He's a mischief. Well, yeah. Well, he likes mischief, though.
Okay, yeah. Which, like, makes sense that he gets along with Boom Boom. Yeah. But, like, compared to her, he's a rule follower. You
yeah,
know what I'm saying?
Yeah, compared to her, for sure.
But, like, I think... that's, like, a nice contrast, maybe, right? Because Boom Boom has, like, no boundaries with other people's, like, space and possessions and anything
yeah.
like, whatsoever.
We'll talk about that later. It's quite insane.
So that could have been, you know, I feel like that's fruitful.
And again, I like the overall premise of this episode, that it begins with Professor X is basically training the New Mutants team.
Right, yeah.
And we got to see that New Mutants movie. When is that going to get the digital release? I know that movie is a huge, enormous flop critically and obviously economically, but we still got to see it. We got to do a whole episode on it.
Okay.
We got to find it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to wait until it gets the digital release. We're not going to go pirate it. I mean, we could and just watch ourselves. I think we should wait for the official release to on an Amazon Prime or something. Before
yeah,
we
I'm
get
sure
into
it will.
Yeah.
It'll make its way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be soon. It can't be too far from now.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, Tabitha's dad finds her in the hallway, and she's just, like, not happy to see him.
Yeah. He manhandles her.
He is trying to convince her to come back home, to put the family back together. We can't do it without you. And she does not want to hear it. She's like, well, try. And she just, like, walks away. And he's like, all right, see you later. He's not deterred whatsoever.
Yeah.
Then we follow her to the lunchroom, where we see Jean eating lunch with Duncan, Scott's rival.
Yeah. This Duncan guy who we don't really get to, like, an up-close look at him yet.
Right.
He's just a generic football jock.
Yeah, so Cyclops and Kurt have lunch together
anyways.
I guess
Jean's going through that phase.
Of what? Not being with Scott?
No, I was just like wanting to date just a jock.
Oh.
But then again, Cyclops is a jock too, really. Let's be real.
What does he play?
It's not that he plays anything, but he's a jock in general.
Oh.
He's a big, overly muscled...
it's from all those 6 a.m. trainings.
Yeah.
In the danger room.
Yeah.
Anyway, Kurt and Cyclops eat together. And
Scott's like he's like a Tom Cruise jock, character of Cyclops. You know, he's like a motorcycle riding, jet piloting. That kind of like intense dude that would be prone to do these really adrenaline driving activities.
Okay, well, Gene will find out. I'm sure.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, Tabitha comes over to talk to Kurt and Scott for a little bit. She tries to take Kurt's soda, but he's like, all right, the soda machine's around the corner there. And, like, it's more just, like, flirting and stuff. It's funny because it's, like, from the exchange you just saw her have with her dad, you'd think, like, oh, maybe she doesn't have money for her own, so she's trying to take his just as, like, you know, oh, I'm your friend, you know, why don't you share with me?
Yeah.
But then she, like, goes to the soda machine around the corner and she puts a little bomb in there and she gets, like, 20 sodas for free.
Yeah.
And she has, like, no, like, moral sense that she shouldn't do that, seemingly.
That, like, and she's just no problem using her powers in public.
So funny. But anyway, over there by the soda machine, she runs into Avalanche and she kind of impresses him. Like, he likes her right away. He's like, wow, you would really fit in, like, with me and my friends.
You're a bad boy.
And she's like, yeah, well, I don't really want to. I don't care. Bye.
And I was hopeful for
even cooler.
I was hopeful for Boom Boom in that moment. Like, yeah, she's a good guy.
Yeah.
You know, she's a little, she's spunky, but she's not going to join the bad guys.
Right.
But we shall see.
Exactly. So, next, we're back home at the X Mansion, and Tabitha's dad is there asking Professor X to see her again. And Professor X denies permission, but right at that moment, her and Kurt end up walking in. So, you know, they're both there, so they
Wolverine threatens to cut off the dad's hands.
Right.
Because he grabs Professor X by the lapels and threatens to bring the media to the school.
Right.
Because he knows it's a mutant school. And, again, but then it's like the dad's a normal guy, knows his daughter's a mutant, and he seems to have an idea this is a school for mutants, but no one else in the world knows about mutants whatsoever. Seems kind of weird, because then that implies, too, that the parents of these children, and now the population of the Xavier Institute is growing,
right,
seem to know that there's something going on with their kids.
Right, and all of those parents are just keeping it quiet, too. Yeah,
it's something inconsistent going on there.
It's a huge conspiracy.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's a conspiracy with the parents. But then again, they do that stuff on the boys. It's a big plot line in and of itself.
Right.
That the parents are sort of in on this Vought conspiracy.
That's true. Yeah, right. But they're... Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he gets Tabitha into a room and is talking to her, and again is asking her to come home with him. Like, oh, we just have to pay off a few debts, and
you,
like,
you know, your mother's in trouble.
You know, it's more for your mother than for me. And
they might imply that the mother might be sick, but then that's not really spelled out.
Right.
Maybe she just has, you know, money problems.
And she's kind of like, all right, fine, whatever. You know, like,
right.
Because he says, like, you know, if you just help us out this one time, then I'll never bother you again.
Yeah.
So, like, that's sad, you know?
Very sad.
That, like, she's willing to do something she doesn't want to do just to get this guy off her back. And, like, right. It's her family. Like, that, you know?
So, it's just, this moment we're kind of reminded that Kurt and Tabitha are grounded, so they can't go to this carnival.
Right.
But Tabitha peer pressures Kurt into helping her sneak out, to teleport there.
Right.
Just to ride one ride, she says.
She climbs up his balcony and talks him into it.
Yeah. A lot of balcony climbing in a lot of TV shows that I watched growing up as a kid.
Romeo and Juliet?
Well, okay. I was just thinking more of, like, Clarissa Explains It All with her best friend neighbor, Sam. True. Uh-huh. But I feel like it happened in a lot of
other shows. I think Saved by the Bell had that a lot, too.
Maybe, yeah. You're right. I think it did. So she convinces Kurt to break their grounding and go to the carnival. And here we get, like, an actually pretty fun sequence of Kurt and Boom Boom having a lot of mischief at the carnival.
Right. She's just making little, like, explosions everywhere.
She's basically ruining, like, the carnival.
Yeah, no one's having a good time except the two of them, basically.
They go on this, like, rocket spin ride, and she throws a little Boom Boom pedal at the control panel, which causes it to go way faster than what's safe, you know, to the point where everyone's throwing up, and that's fun for them. She, like, throws a Boom Boom thing at a popcorn machine and just destroys it for some reason.
Makes the popcorn explode everywhere, just, like, for fun. And she's convincing Kurt to help her by, like, transporting them in and out of places real quick so no one knows that it's them.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just practical jokes. Like, they're having, you know, fun together, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, he's good for that kind of mischief because of his teleportation power.
Right.
Although Scott on a Ferris wheel does notice them both using their powers, so they're not being so discreet.
Right. Right, so if Scott can see them from the Ferris wheel,
other people must notice.
Presumably,
yeah.
Yeah, everyone else can see, and he's just like, oh gosh, like, so, what are you guys doing? Right.
So Boom Boom's blown up half the carnival. I do like that little scene. So they have been slow playing this Scott Jean non-romance. Mm-hmm. Scott gets on the first wheel by himself for some reason, but then this pretty girl who is one of Jean's friends decides to sit next to Scott.
Taryn.
Oh, that's her name?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, why are you joining me, Taryn? And she's like, oh, because three's a crowd. And she's tired of Jean hanging out with the jock guy. And so Jean sees Scott and Taryn on the Ferris wheel, and you get maybe the first sense of jealousy from her.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she realizes that she does like Scott after all.
Well, well, well.
But they don't really go into that too much, which I like, because they're just giving you some like nice background color on their budding relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But at the carnival, Boom Boom runs into her father, and this is where he tells her the plan that they're going to go rob the school of the carnival money, which is hidden behind the principal's safe somewhere. And several people overhear this. One, Avalanche, and two, Kurt, I guess.
Well, he just, like, sees them walking towards the school and knows that something funny must be up, so he decides to follow them.
But I think Avalanche knows what the plot is.
Yeah, yeah.
Because so he gets the Brotherhood of Guys to get together to rob the robbers.
Right. And she, Boom Boom is successful. She opens the safe. Her dad gets the bag of money out. And as they're going down the hallway, Toad swoops in and steals it.
Yeah.
So, you know,
it's at this point, like, the X-Men show up. It's Cyclops, Jean, Spike, and Nightcrawler. And they get into a fight with the Brotherhood guys. And, you know, everyone's sort of wrestling for the money bag.
It's kind of like your typical fight in this show so far. Like, it's always kind of the same characters fighting each other.
Yeah, it's redundant a little bit.
And it's not, like, the most, like, fun action sequences.
No, it's never really that creative.
But anyway, it gets the job done, right? There's, like, a lot of chaos and confusion going on. So Boom Boom's dad ends up with the money again. He runs up to the roof. She goes after him to try to stop him, presumably. But then, like, the roof is caving in.
Because it was damaged by the fire from the previous
time. That they're trying to raise money to fix. And now they're making it worse. But
Nightcrawler saves them by teleporting. You know, they were going to fall, like, three stories to their death.
Right.
He saves them. And Boom Boom and the dad run out of the gym.
Still with the money. The dad wouldn't let go.
Yeah, and Boom Boom's trying to chase him to stop him, but as she's doing that, they're caught by the police.
Right, and both of them are taken into the police station.
Right.
Just the two of them.
So here's where the show got a little bit interesting with how they resolve things. I was surprised on all the developments.
Mm-hmm.
Professor X shows up to pick Tabitha up from the police station with Kurt, and Professor explains to her, it's like, well, your dad's an ex-felon and he had other warrants out for his arrest, so
they're gonna hold him for a while.
He's gonna be in trouble. As for you, Tabitha, I guess you were free to go because they realized that he coerced you into this robbery. All right, back to the Institute. And he's like, oh, you're all gonna be punished.
And she's like, oh, well, I'll just pick up my things from the Institute and get going. And Kurt's like, well, you don't have to leave the Institute, you know? And she's like, well, it's not a good fit for me right now.
Which, this surprised me. I was like, why? I can't. I mean, and Professor X, like, lets her go. That's what blew my mind. He's like, okay, Tabitha, see you later. Like, that's what you're going to do in this moment, Professor? You're not going to try to convince her to stay? You're going to just let her, this rogue mutant, just, like, leave your school who has a troubled family and needs guidance? Like, where is she going to go?
Nah, I thought this was fitting for Professor X's character.
In the show, it is fitting for his character,
like,
but it doesn't
keep anyone up, like, against their will, I don't think.
But it wouldn't be a situation where he would try to convince her to stay.
Mm.
He just says, oh, you're going? All right, see ya.
Bye.
He says, you can come back if you want. I just found that very unpersuasive.
But also, her motivation makes perfect sense to me, too, because you see at the beginning in the training exercise and stuff, like, she doesn't take any of it seriously. She doesn't really see Professor X as a viable
authority
figure.
But she does seem to know the difference between good and bad, and she likes her team members, and she also expressed that
she likes everybody. She doesn't care.
I guess. Well, earlier in the episode, she says that she does not want to join Avalanche. She's like, you guys suck.
She doesn't really know about Avalanche and his friends, I don't think.
Maybe.
And I don't think in the beginning it's so much that she doesn't want to join them. She's just like, why would I? Like, I have a place to live. Like, I'm cool, you know?
Well, anyway, I was disappointed in Professor X's lack of leadership here.
Mm.
I think he needed to say something to her as to, like, why it's important for you to stay with the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't. He's like, all right, see you later.
Right. Well, because he hasn't, like, revealed the mission of the X-Men still to anybody.
Yeah.
So he's not about to break it out for Boom Boom right now, I guess.
All right. So back, now we cut to the Brotherhood's house. Their house is still crappy. It's falling apart.
They just got the water turned off by the city because they haven't paid the bill.
This surprised me as well, because I thought Tabitha was like, I'm going to my mom. Like, that's what I essentially thought, because that would make more sense if she's just like, I'm going to live with my mother.
Right. I'm leaving town, or, you know, we won't see her for a long time.
But no, she shows up at the Brotherhood's house. She just sort of bulldozes her way in there. She's kind of intimidating in a way because of her strong personality, and these guys, these are a bunch of sort of you know, guys not used to girls, especially Blob and Toad, and so she easily just barges her way in. She's like, I'm living with you guys now, and she finds the best room in the house, and
she's like, this room's locked, so I guess that to her means like must be good. So she just like blows it up so that it's the open, and it's Mystique's room that had been locked, and she's like, oh, this is pretty nice. Yeah, I'll stay here.
It does look nice.
It does look really nice. I mean, especially compared to the rest of the house, it's totally disgusting.
I didn't pick up on the fact that it was Mystique's room. Now it makes a lot more sense. I was like, why is this room really nice?
Right. And all like the other guys are like standing outside the room being like, hey, what? And she's like, stay out of my room, and like closes the door on them. It's like, okay, that's a done deal. And Toad, this is where he alludes to the Brotherhood. He's like, doesn't she know no chicks allowed in the Brotherhood or something like that?
Yeah, but I think that's more of an expression of him just being a awkward teenage boy than a hard rule established by, not by Magneto or something.
No, I didn't take it like that either. Right. I thought it was just a way to shoehorn in the term Brotherhood.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Rogue was in the group last year, so.
Right, yeah. She lived in that exact room, apparently.
So, I mean, I don't know if we're going to see more of Boom Boom. I think we're going to see her again, but
now she's on the bad guy's side.
Maybe not too much. And we don't really know if she's going to be a bad guy. I mean, she just needs a place to live.
Yeah, maybe.
But, I mean, oh, and then back, it ends with, like, Kurt sad she left because they seem to have a connection.
Right.
Although Kurt's had a lot of connections with a lot of different ladies lately.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, like, he has the episode where he bonds with Rogue. And the episode where he finally, like, gets to become friends with Kitty. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And now with Boom Boom, so he's been doing a better job of connecting with females, which is, it was kind of vexing him at the beginning because I think he feels
awkward,
bad about his appearance or something.
But
he's sad, and then the episode ends. So I thought it was a good episode. I thought it was just like a good way to introduce a new character. There's some twists and turns along the way, and I think season two is clearly off to a better start than season one.
Yeah, totally agreed.
So I'm happy
this episode a lot too.
Right, I'm happy the show is becoming more enjoyable. Do you have any final words yourself on this one?
No, I mean, like you said, I'm kind of glad that the possibility is left open that we see Tabitha again. I thought she was like a real spunky, engaging kind of character.
Yeah.
which, you know, I feel like the X-Men could always do with characters like that. It's fun.
Yeah.
And,
season two so far better.
Yeah. Season two so far much better.
All right, cool. So, I mean,
looking forward to more.
Yeah, me too. Looking forward to more, you know, and we'll be back next week with some more as well. Any final words before we depart yet again?
Those were my final words.
Okay, good night, everybody. Good night.